We were going to try to learn a sugya this morning that we all learned Maseches Brachos this year in the Kol Vonka and Yeshiva. And we're learning the sixth parak of Maseches Brachos, which deals, of course, with Brachos HaPeiros and Brachos HaYirakos, with fruits and vegetables and grains. So a lot of the sugyas that we're learning are very Zeroyim, very oriented towards Trumas and Maishas, but towards Baretz. So this particular sugya that we're going to embark upon today actually is not a Brachos sugya proper, but is very, very much an agricultural sugya. It is a sugya that very, very much potentially touches us halacha lemaisa, depending on what approach you take. If you take the approach that it applies in full force, as we're going to see some folks can do say, then we have some very, very real halacha lemaisa topics. If you assume that it doesn't apply at all, at least in chutz laretz, then it's going to be a little bit less relevant lemaisa. But again, it is an important sugya for us to familiarize ourselves with. It was suggested that we should use this as a Thanksgiving morning shiur. Why? My Indian, the dinim of Chadash and Yosh, a new grain to Thanksgiving. So I'm not sure whether it was said in a humorous sense, but it has something to do with the harvest. So I immediately Googled to see whether the pilgrims ate the wheat that would have been subject to Chadash. And the good news is that no. So even if there are a couple of briskets out there on the first of Thanksgiving dinner, they would have been making because it was all corn. So corn, Yosh doesn't apply to corn. But putting that aside, let's see if we can actually learn through the sugya. So the sugya of Chadash and Yasha, just to quickly familiarize ourselves with the terms, Chadash means new grain. Anything that's grown during this past year is considered to be Chadash. Anything that's from previous year's grain is considered to be Yasha. We'll talk as we go on where exactly the line of demarcation is. How do you know precisely whether any given grain is Yasha or Chadash? But the Torah tells us very, very clearly in the first set of Maimonides and Pashas Emor that there is a Torah prohibition to eat any produce from new grain. Now, grain here is referring specifically to the five species of grain, which are wheat, barley, and we assume halacha are oats, spelt, and rye. The reason why I say we assume is that we're not 1,000% sure that is true. Wheat and barley, we're, I guess I'd say, as close as possible, we can't be sure. We are 100%, 1,000% sure wheat and barley are chit and sa'ora. The overwhelming majority of the post can assume that the other three grains are the ones that we just called them, oats, spelt, and rye. We're going to assume that way. There was a little bit of a question. There was some who raised a little bit of a red flag that maybe that's not the case. But again, that's been our tradition. Rashi says that explicitly. And we're going to assume that for our purposes of Ashir. So oat, barley, wheat, barley, oats, spelt, and rye. The Torah says in the first of the Ramakomos, one is not permitted to eat either bread products or other kinds of prepared products from these grains until this very day. What is this day? This is the day of the Korban HaOmer, the second day of Pesach. So there's an Isser, what we call Chodesh, eat the new grain. Anything that grew this year is off limits with the Araisa until the second day of Pesach. The Torah Shabbat fills in for us that if you live at a time when there's no Beis HaMikdash, so when does the prohibition of Chodesh ends? It ends on the second day of Pesach, with or without the Korban. There's a machlekes HaTanoim, whether it ends at the beginning, in the morning of the 16th, or the night, the end of the 16th. It doesn't make much of a difference for us, one small day. But Bizman HaMikdash is dependent upon the Korban HaOmer. Bizman HaZeh depends on the day proper. And then the Torah completes by saying, Kukas Olam HaDerasecha. This halach applies into all generations, even at the time when there's no Beis HaMikdash. And now it is the next two words that are the most controversial. B'chol Moshvo Seichem. It applies wherever you live. That's the literal translation of the phrase, B'chol Moshvo Seichem. So what does that term, B'chol Moshvo Seichem, mean? So Rashi references the Gemara in Maseches Kedushin, and Maseches Menachos, that there was a fundamental debate between the Tanoim. What is the Taish, literally, what is the meaning of this phrase, B'chol Moshvo Seichem? So Rashi quotes, Nechlu B'chach Yisrael, that the Chachamim had a major dispute. There are those who say that from here we derive that the prohibition of eating new grain applies in chutz la'aretz as well. Even though this should have been a mitzvah, clear bars, it should have been an agricultural mitzvah, it should have been limited to Eretz Israel. The Torah says that's not the case. According to this opinion, the Torah is saying this is one of the exceptions to the rule. So according to this first opinion, any grain that goes anywhere in the world, whether it's growing in Kansas, Nebraska, or in the olden days in the Ukraine, or wherever in the world the grain is growing, it is subject to this Torah prohibition of Chadash. There is another opinion between the Tanoim that this pasuk is not coming to tell me that grain that grows in Nebraska and Ukraine is subject to Chadash. Rather, of course, it is referring to Eretz Israel. The Chomosh Vaseicha means only those parts of Eretz Yisrael that have already been conquered, that have already been divided, that already have been treated to be part and inhabited by Klal Yisrael. But if it's outside the borders of Eretz Yisrael, then there's no prohibition of Chadash whatsoever. So this is the first, most basic fundamental question that addresses us. So just for a very, very simple example, we have a whole array of different food on the table there that is potentially subject to this Torah prohibition. We have bagels that come from wheat. We got some cookies, got some, you better finish them quickly before we say that they're asur. So we have bagels. We got, although some of them I can tell you in advance are not chadash. We got bagels. We got muffins. We got Danish. We got all kinds of things that are growing with wheat. And we know that this wheat grew in America. We're pretty comfortable, pretty safe to assume this wheat all grew in Kansas, Nebraska, somewhere around there. And at least for now, until we do some research, we have no idea where this wheat came from. Was this wheat that just grew a couple of months ago? Was this wheat that's been sitting in surplus for 5 years? We're not really sure what the answer to that question is. So do we have a Torah prohibition on our hands? So if we take the view of the first opinion of Tanoim, that Chadash applies to Chutz Laaretz, we have a lot of work to do. We can't just sit and eat a bagel, can't just sit and eat a Danish, just eat a ruggle, just assuming everything's okay. You have to first make sure that there's no Chadash here. You have to figure out where in the world this grain came from. So if you take the first approach, then we have a very, very real halakhic issue. Any and every time we sit down to eat just about anything that has any grain in it, in Chutz Laaretz. V'yesh omrim, but according to the second opinion, no, it only applies to those things that are grown in Eretz Yisrael. If we would take that second approach, then we would be home free, then there would be nothing at all for us to be concerned with. So which approach do we take to this topic? How do we pass Gidl HaLocha on this basic, most fundamental question concerning Chadash? Does Chadash apply in Chutz Laaretz? Does Chadash not apply in Chutz Laaretz?
Is it grain or is it the product? That bagel was similar to over a year.
Well, okay, so that bagel, if it's been sitting in your freezer for over a year, I'm not going to comment whether it's chadash over Pesach or whether it's fresh, you want to eat it for breakfast, but it's for sure not going to be chadash because it grew from last year's grain, or 10 years ago grain. Anything that came from this year, I haven't yet defined what this year's grain means. I'll give you just a quick advance and notice what it means, is that there are different planting seasons in America. So much of the grain is planted in the springtime. So that grain that's planted in the springtime is harvested towards the end of the summer. If any of those things come from that grain, that is this year's grain. Anything that came from years before grain, from previous times grain, once the second day Pesach comes, and no pun intended, but passes over that grain, any grain that was in existence and Pesach came, that becomes transformed from being Chadash to becoming Yashar. So if this food here came from the last couple of months worth of grain, then we have a problem. If it came from last season's grain, then we wouldn't have a problem. But we'd have to kind of try to figure that out. So again, if you take the first approach, you have to work hard to figure that out. Take the second approach, I don't care where it came from, I just harvested it yesterday. It's chutz laaretz, everything is fine. So how do we pass Gidl HaLocha on this fundamental question? So in the Mishnayos and the Gemaras itself, it's presented as a machlokes. It is unclear what the conclusion of the Gemara is on this topic. And therefore, the Rishonim begin to debate and try to bring proofs from the Gemara itself. There are three basic sources in terms of Pesach HaLocha, at least in the eyes of the Shulchan Aruch, that were really determined for the most part what Pesach HaLocha is going to be. And that is the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rosh. The Rif lived in the early 1000s, the Rambam a couple generations later, the Rosh a couple of generations later. But these three, the pillars of HaLocha, actually became the basis for Shulchan Aruch. And when the Shulchan Aruch himself writes that whenever he's not sure how to paskin, he looks for these three sources, and he generally speaking follows the majority of the sources. Two out of the three point in one direction, that's how he's going to follow, which of course we just mentioned as the Kol HaBoker the other day. This is why the Shulchan Aruch is tilted in the direction of the Sfaradi Pesach HaLocha, because the Rif and the Rambam are both Sfaradi. The Rosh was an Ashkenazi, the Shulchan Aruch was a Sfaradi. So that's why if you open up just Shulchan Aruch proper, the text of Shulchan Aruch is more often than not representative of the Sfaradi tradition. The Ramon, who was an Ashkenazi, lived in Poland. So he brings back a little bit more of the Ashkenazi traditions, with a little bit more weight on the Rosh and the Balei Tosfos. So it kind of evens the scale a little bit. So how do we pass in Halacha this question? So the Shulchan Aruch and the third of the Ramakamos in Yeridea, in Siman Reish Tzadik Gimel Sif Beis, is pretty clear. Isser HaChadash Noeg Bein Ba'aretz Bein B'chutz Laaretz. That's the end of the story. What led the Shulchan Aruch to say this? Because in this case, this wasn't the majority view. This was actually a unanimous view. The Rif, the Rambam, and the Rosh, all paskin like the stricter opinion, and therefore the Shulchan Aruch unequivocally writes that Chadash is no egg even in Chutz La'aretz. Notwithstanding what the Shulchan Aruch says, nevertheless, there was a dissenting view in Rishonim. There actually were several Ashkenazi Rishonim who were a little bit more makel on this question, and we're of the opinion, no, that we paskin the other view. And now this becomes a little bit tricky because this becomes a very delicate Pesach Halacha question. Here we have what seems to be the overwhelming majority of the view, the early Rishonim, and the majority view as encoded in the Shulchan Aruch, to be machmer in the shayla, not to just ignore Chodesh and say, no, everything's fine, everything's great, nothing to worry about. Most of the opinions seem to maintain that Chodesh is a very real problem, but there was a minority view. So what do we do with that? Do we have a right to follow a view that doesn't seem to be in the majority? So generally speaking, not. Generally speaking is we have a Ruach HaRam Mahabdos. We try to look towards what seems to be the more mainstream, the more conventional wisdom on a given topic, what seems to be the majority view. But there is a Gemara in the fourth of the Mar Makomos that may be very, very helpful for our discussion. The Gemara here is not at all talking about Chodesh and Yoshon. It's talking about a very, very intricate question in Halacha that relates to Chastuba V'Tahara. But the principle that emanates from this sugya may become important for us. The Gemara in the fourth of the Ramah Kamas tells us the following story. Tana Rabbanan. Ma'isa Ba'asa Rebbe K'Rebbe Eliezer. It was a Machlokes Rebbe Eliezer and the Chacham about a very, very intricate question. We'll leave out the details for now in terms of Chastuba V'Tahara. And Rebbe Dan Nosi, was followed the view of Rabbi Eliezer Lekuler. Rabbi Eliezer had a certain leniency that was not generally accepted. And Rabbi Yudah Nossi, again, was a couple of generations later, one time he followed the view of Rabbi Eliezer. Liachash Niskar, after he realized that he maybe shouldn't have done that, because this was really the minority view, Omri said, it's okay. Rabbi Eliezer's shita can be followed here. Kedayu Rabbi Eliezer l'smochala b'shasat chak. When there's a shasat chak circumstances, this particular question was there were extenuating circumstances. The background was that it happened to be a time of a famine. There wasn't that much food around. And some of the food became tamei. And the question is, wasn't it able to be used? It would be a big hefzer. It would be a big loss. And therefore, Rabbi Yudah Nossi said, when you have a shasat chak, you can rely on opinions that you wouldn't otherwise rely upon under normal circumstances. So the Gemara just tries to fine-tune what that means. My lachash aniska. What did Rebbe remember? The ilema, do we say liachash aniska de ein halacha k'Rebbe Eliezer ela k'Rabbanan b'shasat chakachi avikabasei? Did Rebbe remember that there was an absolute psak halacha which negated Rebbe Eliezer's view? Was there a formal agreement by the Beis Din at the time not to follow Rebbe Eliezer? If it was what we call a nimnu v'gomu, there was a literal vote and there was a psak, but there was an absolute codification not to follow Rebbe Eliezer, then we have no right to follow him even under extenuating circumstances. So that cannot be the story. Now, the Gemara says, there was never a formal psak halach against Rebbe Eliezer. What did Rebbe remember? He remembered that Rebbe Eliezer was the minority view. He was never outvoted. He was never discounted. Therefore, we could rely on his view under extenuating circumstances. So basically, the Gemara is telling us two very, very important rules that govern Pesach Halacha. We generally follow the majority, but not always. If there's a minority view and there are extenuating circumstances, you may follow that view. However, an important exception to that rule, that's only true if the minority view has not been outright rejected. If the minority view has been outvoted, there was a Pesach Beis Din that had been said, that view is just not part of normal halacha anymore, then that view cannot be brought back to life, even under the most difficult cases. So now comes the Taz, one of the great poskim. So the Maor Mochel they have in the Taz is actually the next part of the Taz. So we're going to quote that a little bit later. But this part of the Taz, it wasn't a mistake. It was right. But the other part was a lot longer, had Rachmanis on you and me last night. So the Taz suggests that maybe that's where the following phenomena occurred in the Jewish people. Taz is sitting in Poland now in the 1500s. He's reading the Sugya and Masechet Kedushin, reading the Rif and the Ram and the Rush, reading the Shulchan Aruch, and Chadash applies in Chutz La'aretz, applies in Chutz La'aretz, but everybody's coming to the same conclusion. It applies in Chutz La'aretz. The Taz is looking around the Polish marketplace, and he's seeing Jews walking in and buying bread and pastries and wheat and barley and nuts. And nobody's researching. Nobody's on yoshen.com trying to figure out where these pastries came from. Nobody cares, says the Taz. Nobody cares. Nobody knows. Nobody cares. Nobody's researching. Nobody's looking into the question in Poland. says the Taz, I'm not talking about people who are not so observant, the people who are not so knowledgeable. I'm talking about Gedolei, the Rabbonim are not looking into Chodesh and Yashar. The Rosh Hashivas are not caring about it. Nobody cares about it. The Frum, Heilig Yirei Shemayim, these are our great, 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 great grandparents who are sitting in Poland in the 1500s. Nobody knew. You'd ask the average person, ooh, did you make sure that it's not a question of Chodesh? Did you make sure that the Chalas are Yashar? Huh? Yashar? That's like a Lomda Shesugim, when you learn Maseches Menach, but it's after with Poland. So says the Taz, the Minig Yisrael for hundreds and hundreds, perhaps thousands of years, especially the Ashkenazi communities, was to be lenient on this question. Lenient on what? Based on who? Based on where? Says the Taz, based on the fact that there were some opinions that Chodesh doesn't apply in Chutz Lawrence. It was an opinion in Tanoim, and even though it's true, the Rif Ram and the Rush did not concur with that view, but there were others who did. There were other Rishon who did follow that view. Were they the minority view? Yes, says the Taz. Was it ever Nifsuk LaHaloch against them? Was there an official formal Beis Din that said they're wrong? No. We don't have formal, but they didn't have to do those things today. Therefore, the Taz says it's labeled as a Das Yochid that one can rely upon B'Shas Adchak. What's the Shas Adchak? I'll tell you the Shas Adchak. There's no food in Poland, says the Taz. We have nothing to eat. We're going to go, Mikoshi, we have food that we can get in the marketplace. We're going to start to throw out all the wheat and all the barn and all the oats, and everything is a Chashash of Chadash and everything is Osir. We're going to starve to death. So therefore, the Taz says it's a Shas Adchak, and Kedai who? You want to put names on those Rishon? Kedai Rabbeinu Baruch, Kedai Ozeru. I'll dig you up a Rishon here and there who says that Chadash doesn't apply to Chutz Lawrence. All the grain that's growing in the Polish field, says the Taz, we're relying upon the Yachid B'Shas Adchak. Came along the Shach, who was the Taz's contemporary. Interesting, Shach and the Taz were about 60 years in age apart. The Taz was the Gadol HaDor at the time. We're talking about the late 1500s, early 1600s. It was like the Gadol HaDor. And then all of a sudden, the Shach enters onto the scene, about 60 years younger, and starts to write in his sefer certain things that he disagreed with the Taz upon. So people got a little bit nervous. Said, who's this young fellow starting up with the Gadol HaDor? But the Shach almost like had to write an apology. He writes that, I'm writing a sefer. Torahi olam d'nitzach. I have to write what I think is the emes, but don't think for a minute that I have any disrespect at all. Chalilu for the Taz. And then the Shach tells a story. He writes a story that he once had the schus of hosting the Taz for Shabbos. Right, so he was a younger man. Shach was in his 20s, and the Taz was in the 60s, 70s, whatever it was. And he had the schus of hosting him. And the Shach writes, anyone who saw me that Shabbos will realize the tremendous, I served him hand in hand, every need I took care of, the Hailing, the Gavador, the Gadol, when the Gadol Yapos came up the generation, the Shach says, but Afal Bichain, I'm still going to disagree, because I have Torah's embassy, you have to learn the Sugi, you have to pass, you have to say whatever you think that Loch is. So the Shach and the Taz had a wonderful personal relationship, even though, Lamaisa, there were a lot of Machloks in Malach between them. So this is one of those Machloks, and the Shach writes about this Taz. You think that this is not correct. This is an incorrect application of the Gemara Maseches Nida. The Shach argues that the Gemara Nida happens to be talking about a din de Rabbanan. The context of the sugi is a din de Rabbanan. Says the Shach, by dinim de Rabbanan, we can be so much more lenient. By dinim de Araisa, Achmiram Mahatel, says the Shach. It's a majority view. Finish. End of the story. It's a majority view. You have to follow the majority. If the majority view is that Chodesh applies to Chutz Lawrence, there's no ands and buts, to which the Taz would probably respond. Achri Rav Mahatos means when you vote, when you have a base in the vote. There's a very often you'll hear a phrase. People say most poskim say. That's a like kotera mo. Depends how you count most. It depends who you consider to be posek. Very often you'll hear that phrase most poskim say because the only people I'm consulting are the people I consider to be poskim. So you have to always be weary with that phrase. So not chalil v'chalil that we're accusing the Shach of the Taz of misusing the phrase most, but the Taz would probably respond back to the Shach that Achra Mahatos doesn't apply in the context outside of a formal Beis Din Sanhedrin. Achra Mahatos, because it appears that most of the Rishonim say such and such, that's not called the definitive Rov, and therefore B'Shas Adchak we can be maker. So the first leniency that was at least supported by the Taz as a possibility, that seems to have been the support for the practice in Ashkenaz communities for hundreds of thousands of years, that we paskin l'halacha, whether l'chadchila, b'diyavad, shas adchak, we follow the ikra din is, it doesn't apply to Chutz Lawrence. So if you're willing to go out on the limb and say that, then enjoy your bagels, enjoy your Danish, you don't have to do any more research. The game is over, the shiur is over, you go down and date, whatever minute is next minute, the game is over. Chadash doesn't apply in Chutz Lawrence. However, not everybody was comfortable to say that. The Rif wasn't comfortable. The Rambam, the Rush, or the Shulchan Aruch wasn't. Even the Ramah wasn't so comfortable to say that. The Shach for sure wasn't comfortable. Want some more names? The Gro wasn't comfortable to say it. Want a couple of more names? The Shagat. I give a long list of people who weren't so comfortable to say it. On the other hand, we do have a tradition that was supported by Gedolei Olam for hundreds of, probably thousands of years, to be Mekel. And one of the very, very solid reasons to be Mekel was Chutz Lawrence and the game zone. But many Acharonim weren't as comfortable just to hang their hats on the Chutz Lawrence Kula, and perhaps wanted to add a little bit more to it. So the Taz himself, in the fifth of the Mamre Kromos now, adds on another point that could potentially serve as a source for Hakel. So the Taz in the fifth of the Ramakomos writes, Mori v'chomi zal. Who was Mori v'chomi? The Taz was the Bach. The Taz was brought to the Bach. I think he was about 7 years old or so. Like a child prodigy. He was brought to the Bach to learn. And then the Bach watched over him and trained him. And I think he raised him in his house. And then when he turned the marriageable age, somewhere between 13 and 15, whatever age that was in those days. So then he took him, he chose him for a son-in-law. So the Taz quotes his father all the time, Mori v'chomi. So Mori v'chomi is Abkos, Shemot HaTshuva Achas, Begos Rashal, V'shem Me'il Tzedep, V'shem Ben Ravigda, Kain Tzedep, V'shem Tshuva Sriva. A few generations back, but as a source to the Riva. The Riva was one of the Balei HaTosfos. The Ravigda was from the period of the Balei HaTosfos. She'ein Chodesh Noeg B'shel Ovdei Kechavim. Forget about Chutz Lawrence. It doesn't apply to non-Jewish grown wheat. So therefore comes the Riva and the Bach and saying, if you would have a Jewish farmer in the Ukraine, a Jewish farmer in Nebraska growing grain, that would be a problem. But it's a non-Jewish farmer, and I could say probably with pretty safety that wherever these grain came from, for these rugluch and these bagels, wherever they came from the Midwest, they did not come from Yankel Shmerl's field. They came from a Joe the farmer's field, from a non-Jewish farmer. And therefore, the Bach says, "Ein chadish noig b'shal ovdei kechavim." End of discussion. Where it came from is a complicated sugya b'sevus Rosh Hashanah, but there is a source for this. Let's go back for a moment to the third of the Rambam Makomos. Just how much the Shulchan Aruch thought of that. The Shulchan Aruch also knew of that possibility and says it pretty clearly. It's a chadash noig bein ba'aretz bein b'chutzlaretz bein b'shal Yisrael bein b'shal ovdei kechavim. So the Shulchan Aruch didn't accept that, didn't buy into that. The Vilna Gaon has a fascinating comment about this leniency about ovdei kechavim. He thought it was so wrong, it was so off. He dug up Yerushalmi against. He was so convinced that it was wrong that he made the following comment. One of the Acharonim was notes on the side of Shulchan Aruch called the Ber HaGola. Ber HaGola was a couple of generations before the Gra. The Ber HaGola went along with this Bach. He thought this Bach was right. It's a non-Jewish farmer. Everything's okay. And the Ber HaGola puts a lot of stamp approval onto this. So the Gra, when he comments upon this Kula, he says it's wrong, it's wrong, it's wrong. And he says about the Ber HaGola, it would have been better if he wouldn't have written what he wrote. That's his Lashon. He said it would, Yafalo Hashtika. If you would have been quiet and not quoted this, what the Gross says was an erroneous opinion, it would have been better for everybody. Why is that so fascinating that the Gross wrote that? The Gross was the Gross grandfather. He was a great grandfather, one or two generations back. So the Gross didn't say, my Zayda is wrong. My Zayda made a big mistake. He said, Yafala Shtika. It would have been better maybe in this particular line, maybe he shouldn't have said what he said. So this is, again, this is Kula number two, but as we're already beginning to see, Kula number one was highly controversial, at best, a minority view. Kula number two is highly controversial. Now, again, we can't say, well, we'll take two controversial kulas and make it mutter. One of them has to be right, but if neither of them are right, we're back in a pickle. And so the Ramah has another approach to this topic. The Ramah, the sixth of the Ramah Kompas, is, of course, for Ashkenaz, but it's absolutely critical because the Ramah was the Pesach par excellence for Ashkenazim. The Ramah addressed this question as well. The Ramah is also well aware of the fact, he also lived in Poland in the 1500s, well aware of the fact that our great-great-grandparents were not checking their websites or their phones or any other way for that matter as to whether anything was Yashin or Chadash. Comes the Ramah and says in the sixth of the Ramah Kompas the following. The Shulchan Aruch tells us, before the Ramah says, how do you know whether something is new or old? So the answer is very, very simple. It's a Mishnah. It says it all depends, when did it take root? If this grain took root before the 16th of Nisan this past year, so then that is called old grain. Even though it wasn't harvested yet, but it would already have taken root, that's called old grain. If it took root after Kazayin Nisan of this year, that's called new grain. Those are the ABCs of Chadash and Yashin. Says the Ramah Hagah, Umikamakam Kol Stam Tvua Shali Achra Pesach. Says the Ramah, based on these facts, you walk into a marketplace in Poland, you want to buy some bread, you want to buy some cereal. It's all mutter. You know why? What you don't know, it's mutter. Mikach sveik sveik. Every time you buy yourself a Danish, you buy yourself a bagel, you have a double doubt working in your favor. What's the sveik sveik? We know sveik sveik is mutter. Safaki b'shana shavra. Maybe it's last year's grain. Maybe it's from sitting around in the surpluses in the storehouses in Poland for who knows how long. Maybe it's last year's grain. V'yimtim tzalami b'shana zu. And even if it's this year's grain, v'kamakom dilmanisha shakana ba'aymer. Maybe it's this year's grain, but maybe it took root before the Omer, which would also be mutter. The Baruch Hashem, the Rabbah says, we can breathe a sigh of relief. You can go into a store and buy any grain product. Everything is mutter, mikach, sveik, sveik. So this Rabbah is also very, very problematic. This seems to be a violation, a flagrant violation of the basic ABCs of sveik, sveik. We're actually talking about it in the Kovoka tomorrow in a different context. It's called shenechon. It's the same suffix. How do you define whether it's last year's or this year's? If it's from before the Omer, it's last year's. It's after the Omer, this year's. That's like saying, maybe it's mutter. You know why? Maybe it was planted in 19, maybe it was planted in Tavshin Pei Aleph. Maybe it was planted in Tavshin Pei. That is fake, fake. That's the same suffix. So it's just semantics. So this Ramah is very, very, very difficult. Where does all of this put us today? Bottom line, where do we have today? We're going to a store, we're sitting down at a table, we're about to service a challah. I want to know, Rabbi, tachlis, what's happening? So we have three different approaches here. In terms of kulas, we have those who say, I don't know, the sugya is over, it's chutz laretz, end of the story. Others will say, it's goyish grain, leave me alone, I don't want to hear the story. And others will say, well, it's a sveik sveik, everything's okay, wonderful sveik sveik, even though the rabbah said it, we're not quite sure we understand it. But we have to fine tune a little bit because we have to move a little bit closer to current events. We have to leave Poland of the 1500s and try to enter the Midwest of the 2000s, of the 20s, and try to see how does any of this play out for us. So if you go down the first two approaches, that chutz laretz, therefore the game's over, or it's non-Jewish farmer, the game's over, then we're good to go. Then the shizzle. Then there's nothing else to say. But if you're very, very weary about those two kulas, which many, many folks are more weary about it, and you're kind of taking the approach of the Ramah that we don't really know, we're not really sure, we have fakes, fakers, let's try to figure out, well, what are the facts? Before we throw our hands up and say, it's a sveik sveika, what are the facts, no pun intended, what are the facts on the ground, literally? In America, in the year 2023, what are the facts? Are those bagels chadash? Are they yashan? Are they suffix? What is coming from where? So we have to understand a few things about American harvesting and agriculture. We have to understand that there are what we call two different planting seasons in America. We have what's called winter wheat and what's called spring wheat. I'm using the word wheat now. It could apply to the other grains also, but those are the terms that are used. So certain grains are planted twice. Not the wheat is for sure. There are two different planting seasons in America, winter wheat and spring wheat. Winter wheat, kishmo kenu, is planted right around now, early now, October time or so. It grows during the winter time, and it begins to hit the shelves, begins to make it onto your kitchen, into your stores, after Pesach already. It takes a few months for it to grow. It takes a little bit of time for it to get processed. When it makes it to the stores, to the consumer, it's after Pesach. We can breathe a sigh of relief. Any food that's made with winter wheat in America is going to be, by definition, Yashan. You're not going to see that grain until after Pesach, and therefore there's nothing to worry about. But there's another planting season in America called the spring wheat, and we'll explain in a little while why they plant twice. There's a whole nother batch of wheat that's planted on different ground, different farms, called spring wheat. Spring wheat, kishmonken, is planted in the springtime, and it's harvested in the summertime, and it begins to make it to your tables in the early fall. And it's the spring wheat that raises all the problems for chadash in potentially America today. Because spring wheat is planted in the spring, which is just around Pesach time. Now, this becomes a critical question. How much before Pesach is it planted? Because remember, the Mishnah says, if it's planted and takes root before Pesach, then it will automatically be labeled as last year's grain. Then it's automatically yashan. What are the facts? Is it planted early enough in the spring to have enough time to take root, which could be anywhere from 3 days to 2 weeks, depending on who you ask, different opinions. But is it planted in enough time? Or is it planted a little bit too late that it just by a few days may miss the cutoff point, which will be a disaster because then all that grain is going to make it to the marketplace by around late August, early September. And now you can have all, for the next 6 months, you can have all this grain floating around that's potentially chadash. So what are the facts on the ground? So the answer to that question is, it depends. It depends on a lot of different factors. It depends. Some of it is our fault, and some of it is the farmer's fault. A lot of it not fault. A lot of it is the Ribbono Shel Olam decision. So some of it is, in a sense, comes from us. How early is Pesach that year? Is it early Pesach or is it a late Pesach? Later Pesachs are better for the following season because you have more time to begin the planting process. Shonim Uberuses are great for the following year. If it's a very early Pesach, Pesach at the end of March, that's going to give us less time to maneuver with. The farmers are not necessarily looking at our Shonim Uberus. That's not exactly the number one factor as to when they're going to plant. There are other things. There are weather factors, other economic factors. In Europe, fascinating, the Rishonim quote, in Europe, there was another very, very important factor. I don't think it plays too much of a role in modern-day America today, but there was a factor as when, believe it or not, Lent was, because the real from non-Jewish farmers wouldn't plant until the Lent season was over. So the Rishonim write, let's daven and pray for a late Lent. The later the Lent, the better it is for us. So we have a lot of strange things that are the Rishon is the phrase you make Inui Shalahem, which is Lent, the season before their holidays. So there are a lot of things that are going into this equation. So any given year, the planting season in Nebraska and all these places in Kansas could be sometime middle March, late March, early April. Again, depending on the rainy season, depending on the cold, depending on what the farmers' economic cheshbon is, it can get very, very tricky. So again, when you're dealing with winter wheat, okay, when they plant it, you're never going to see it until after it's already ushered. Anything that's spring wheat is a potential problem. Again, assuming that you're going, that chutzpahs is a problem, so you're assuming that goyim is a problem, then anything with spring wheat can potentially be a problem. Oats are generally planted in the spring, so oats can potentially have much more of a problem. Spelt is usually not, so it's less of a problem. Wheat goes depending on the product. How do you know? How do you make an educated guess about this? So there are certain products that actually use winter wheat and certain products use spring wheat. Because spring wheat and winter wheat grows a little bit differently, a little bit different characteristics of it. One's a little bit harder, a little bit softer, more protein, less protein, whatever, different better. There are certain products that tend to always use winter wheat. There are other products that tend to always use spring wheat. And there are a lot of products that tend to use combinations, mixtures of both. Because winter wheat has certain milas and spring wheat has certain milas. So the mix together the milas, you get the best of all worlds. So it's not always easy to make an absolute statement. This is for sure what the week. Sometimes it is, and sometimes it's not. So, what do you do? It's a total hefkeiros. Is it a fake speaker? Not a fake speaker. So, this is where Baruch Hashem technology is really, really helping us. That although 30, 40 years ago, it was very, very hard to know, and it was so difficult to be mocked with those who want to be mocked in Yashar. Basically, it mocks us the entire year. It's very, very hard to know what any given thing was 30, 40 years ago. Today, anything and everything is so easily tracked. I can tell you in less than 3 seconds where anything comes from. Everything has codes on it. Everything is dated. Everything has been already. We know exactly where. So if I look at a box of cereal, and I'll see best before such and such date. So I know for a fact when this cereal was put into this box. If I know for a fact that this cereal was put into the box before the wheat of last year's wheat, it actually made it to the factory. By definition, I know that it's yashar. So I think this was a simple example. Most cereals have a year expiration date on it. So if you take a look at the box of cereal and it says on it, used before June 15th, 2024, you know for a fact that cereal was put into that box on June 15th, 2023. I know for a fact that the wheat harvest wasn't even harvested yet because I get 5,000 emails telling me when the wheat harvest starts in the beginning of the end of July. So I know with absolute certainty this is not this year's grain. There's no way in the world this could have been this year's grain. Yeah. So there are certain products, you buy your pastas, you look at the date, it's easy, 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 easy. Who did all the research for us? Baruch Hashem, there was one individual who took upon himself. His name was Yosef Herman. He was just nifter not that long ago. He's actually mishpach with someone in the Ashurin. He took upon his life work to try to organize this stuff over the last 30, 40 years. He created the guide to Yashan. It used to be just a simple paper guide, a piece of paper and dates and codes and everything. Now we've moved on in the world. Everything's on the phone. I get an email the beginning of the season telling you what's what, every date, every code, everything. And there's yashar.com. You can go to any store, get any code, check the picture of the thing, press yashar.com, and they'll tell you exactly where it came from, exactly what date it is. They will tell you either it's absolutely yashar. They will tell you we can't verify that it's yashar. But or they're most probably never going to say it's really chadash. You can never really say for certain that it's chadash. But very, very often, it takes about 3 seconds usually to figure out any given product. So I can tell you in advance that where do those rubber come from? The old Grand Essex, right? Grand Essex Bakery is all Yoshin. Where the bagels from? Poppy's bagels are all Yoshin. Okay? So not everything is Poppy's Yoshin, but the pizza is all Yoshin and the bagels are all Yoshin. So because they're getting from the flour that has already been checked, all the codes have been checked and checked and checked and time and time and time again. So the world, even our own world of Tidak, has changed to such an extent that if you think about it, once it becomes easier to be Makar and Yoshin, then more people are doing it. More people are doing it, then it becomes more worthwhile for the producers to be Makar on it because you get more customers. So just a small, literally just the change we've seen literally in the last almost 30 years. I remember we were having a family simcha in Hawaii. We still lived in the Heights at the time. And we had one of our relatives, Mark Tishol, was Makar and Yoshin, and he was joining us for Shabbos. So he asked me, just like, all he wanted was some challah rolls that were Yoshin. That was it. He didn't want anything else. So I remember I had to go all the way to the other side of the Heights. Remember Grunewald's Bakery? You know, Grunewald's Bakery. So they were Makar and Yoshin back in the heyday, back in the 50s. Well, everything's finished. You said it, I didn't say it. So I remember I had to go cross town in Washington Heights to go find challah rolls that were Yoshin. Today in Teaneck, to the best of my knowledge, it is impossible to buy challah rolls that are not Yoshin in Teaneck today. Because all the bakeries in Bergen County are all machbid on Yoshin. All the Hamisha places that are bringing in all the Hamisha challah rolls, all the Hamisha bakeries, they're all machbid on Yoshin also. So it's almost impossible to find. If you once you begin to branch out to other kinds of foods, so then you follow the codes, you follow the dates. It's significantly easier than it ever was. There's a little bit of stocking up. Some people in Makar and Yoshin do a little bit of stocking up beforehand because usually around August time is when the issues begin to. You get the 5,000 emails telling you exactly. I get that first picture of that first oat, that first wheat machine. You know, doing the first harvesting, so you know. Usually I get that picture like around the beginning of August. I know already trouble's about to start. So, and then it takes a few weeks till everything starts to make its way. But so some people in like August time will start to buy up, you know, boxes of cereals. But I found that over the years, even that's not so critical. Years ago, it was more necessary today. Yeah. Please don't take it out of context. But if you know which stores to shop at, you know which stores have old stuff on the shelves. We'll leave it at that. There are certain stores that are very, very good for finding Yoshin well past the, I didn't say to buy expired food, but I'm saying you have to know, your business a little bit. Anyway, the bottom line is everyone should decide for themselves what to do. The Midrash Yisrael was Hakel and their Gedolei Gedolei Olam, even not a Yemizah in America, Gedolei Gedolei Shiva, Gedolei Pais, Gedolei Bottom. Or make a legamri. They don't look at codes, they don't look at anything. They just enjoy, go have this slice of pizza and gavarno, and they rely on the Minig Yisrael for deri deri deri. So those who want to follow that route of every right to do so, they're following the Gedolei Olam for generations gone by. Those who want to try to follow this from root, so it's doable today. It's much, much easier than it was. I strongly recommend you talk with your wives first, because she's going to be the one who has to bear the brunt of it. So you decide. Everyone should decide for themselves. But again, nobody should feel compelled at all. This is something that the Minhag Yisrael has been and is. There is to be Mako. There were always some who wanted to be a little more Nachman. So it depends. So if you look at most of the Hamish flowers, actually stay on the Yashon because they're coming from pre-stored, frozen-stored rubber kind of flour from previous years. If you go like to the regular, the regular kinds of the non-Jewish brands of flours, the gold metal flours, that kind of stuff, so there are codes on it. You look at the date, you can tell right away from the date. If you just literally go on either you go on the email from Gat Yashin, or you go on the Yashin.com website, there are a few different ways of doing it, and you'll have the answers within 5 seconds. So that's the problem. So that was true for a long time. Many, many years ago in America, that was actually true. And probably back in the 50s, there's probably much, much less of a Yashin problem because they had all the surplus. What happened over the years is America starts to start to export grain to other places. So we basically gave... We exploited the Yoshin and kept the better stuff for ourselves. So that svar of the surplus grain is probably not as true as it was back in the 50s and 60s. So, we'll stop for everyone. Enjoy breakfast. Okay.